China woos the Philippines amid increasing rivalry with the US, while Manila grants Washington more military bases. So how's the Philippines going to strike a balance in its relations with the two superpowers? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. China's foreign minister has just wrapped up a visit to the Philippines. It was a meeting between neighbours, not only with a history of deep economic ties, but also of long-running territorial disputes. The two ministers have pledged to work together to resolve their differences. The visit was the latest in a series of high-level meetings between the Philippines and China and the United States, who are all vying for the upper hand in the Asia-Pacific. We'll unpack this with our guests shortly, but first, Alexandra Byers begins our coverage.
China's foreign minister arrived in Manila hoping to strengthen what he called a millennia-old tradition of friendship. Jin Gong met his counterpart, as well as President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. They've pledged to work together to resolve territorial disputes in the South China Sea.
Amid the fluid and turbulent regional situation, a healthy and stable China-Philippines relationship is not only meeting the aspirations of our two peoples, but also in line with the common aspirations of regional countries.
I hope that today's meeting will give us an opportunity to follow through on the plans and gains made for our country's recent high-level interactions and make some headway in addressing common issues and challenges.
The meetings happened as the United States and Philippines are staging the largest joint military drills they've ever conducted. The exercises, called Balikatan, which means shoulder to shoulder, involve nearly 18,000 troops and are due to run until the end of the month.
This year's Balikatan will be the biggest ever, an indication of the growth of our alliance and how it continues to evolve to meet our shared goals.
Washington and Manila recently agreed to resume joint patrols in the South China Sea. The deal also gives U.S. forces access to four more Philippine army bases, including one near Taiwan, something that has angered China. Beijing considers the self-governing island its own, and earlier in April conducted military exercises practicing precision targeting and simulating what it called the encirclement of Taiwan. President Marcos has denied the Philippines could be used as a launching pad by the U.S. and promised on Saturday to improve communication with China. But as regional tensions simmer, the question is just how long he'll be able to maintain that balance. Alexandra Byers, Al Jazeera, for Inside Story.
For more on this, let's bring in our guests. In Hanoi is Richard Heydarian. He's an academic and author of books such as Asia's New Battlefield, US-China, and the Struggle for the Western Pacific. In Washington, D.C. is Gregory Poling, director of the Southeast Asia Program and Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Andrew Leung is a China policy analyst who joins us from Hong Kong. A warm welcome to you all. I'd like to begin in Hanoi with Richard Heydarian. Richard, the biggest military exercise that the US and the Philippines have ever taken place. Manila now promising more military bases within the Philippines itself for the US. And now you have the Chinese foreign minister visiting. Is this a case of too little, too late for the Chinese? Are they trying to play catch up now?
Right. I mean, on the one hand, the Philippines is kind of in a strategic sweet spot where I think it has a better bargaining position when it comes to dealing with China, because right now we have revitalized our alliance with the United States in ways that we didn't do in the past 6 years or so under former President Rodrigo Duterte. I think what's happening here is the Philippines is correcting under President Marcos Jr. the excessive and fruitless flirtation with China. When you had a situation where President Duterte, you know, did not assert our arbitration case in the South China Sea, he tried to downgrade or kind of, in fact, undermine our alliance with the United States. And he was offered billions of dollars in investments in China. And yet, after 6 years of Duterte's presidency, not much concrete big-ticket infrastructure investments came in from China. And to make matters worse, actually, the situation in the South China Sea, where the Philippines and China have maritime disputes, actually deteriorated So President Marcos Jr., in fairness to him, tried to give this relationship with China a chance. In fact, he visited China earlier this year in January. But if you look at the long joint statement that came out, practically no serious concessions from China, whether on infrastructure investments, a lot of them more pledge-trapped than debt-trapped, nor was there any concessions from China on the South China Sea front. So the Philippines, realizing that it doesn't have much of a bargaining position vis-a-vis China and that it has had a fruitless people's towards China, is now going back to its traditional allies. So what is the lesson for China? The lesson for China is that you cannot have the Philippines on the cheap. If you want to have a better relationship with the Philippines, you have to offer something concretely to us, literally concretely in terms of investments, but also, more importantly, when it comes to the territorial disputes in the South China Sea.
Andrew, would you agree with that? You can't have a relationship, China can't have a relationship with the Philippines on the cheap, that it needs to be fruitful. The word that Richard used was fruitless. Would you agree with any of that?
Well, first of all, you've got to look at the relationship. It's not just between the Philippines and China. It is between China and the United States, involving the South China Sea and Taiwan. A much bigger picture than just relationship between Philippines and China. Now, let's not forget that the Philippines has got a defense kind of agreement, which is renewed, I think, every couple of years. And under the agreement, the United States is given access to different assets in the Philippines. It seems that recently this agreement, some sort of an accord, has been reached with the United States, trying to play both sides. In other words, Philippines would like to benefit from the U.S. Military presence as a counterweight against China. But of course, the Philippines is not in the Philippines' interest to provoke a regional war over Taiwan or over other waters, because immediately it would impinge on using the Philippines as a collateral damage. That would be very serious for the Philippines. And now what it seems that it's not a sweet spot, it's a very dangerous and delicate spot, because by allowing American military presence in the Philippines, in case that there is a war over Taiwan, for example, these military assets, American military assets, could be mobilized and were subject to retaliation, military retaliation from Beijing, using missiles or other bombardment and hurting the Philippines nation and the people. So I think it's a very delicate spot.
Gregory, I will come to you. Gregory, I will come to you in just a second, but I just want to push Andrew on one of his points. Andrew, right now, though, right now, at this moment, it's the US that are winning this relationship with the Philippines. It's not China. That billions of dollars worth of investment that China promised under successive governments of the Philippines didn't materialize. So right now, the US does have the upper hand in the Philippines over China. Surely that's what it looks like.
Yes, I think the United States, of course, has got an upper hand militarily. As I said, there is a precedent military accord with the Philippines, along which has been lasting for quite a number of years already. And then the United States did deploy military assets in the Philippines, and after the recent negotiations between the Philippines and the United States, and there had been some sort of agreement to continue to allow the American access to this military assets inside the Philippines. What I'm trying to say is that while the United States has got leverage over the Philippines, the United States does not necessarily have leverage over China. Because let's not forget, the China's Navy has been is larger than the United States in terms of numbers. But secondly, the waters in over the Taiwan Strait is much nearer to China than the United States. And of course, China has got the anti-access, area denial missiles or aircraft killing missiles, and also remote control drones and underwater assets that can deny the intervention by the United States. But on the other hand, this is no formula to prevent a hot war. And whenever a hot war happens, right, then the military assets inside the Philippines could be collateral damage. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, let's bring in Gregory Poling here. We've just been talking about Navy, we're talking about maritime, clearly the Philippines, an archipelago of islands. But these are two countries that cannot actually agree on even what to call it. China calls it the South China Seas. The Philippines calls it the West Philippine Sea. It's crucial what's going on when it comes to the maritime, when it comes to the both navies in the area, no?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think when we talk about the U.S.-Philippine Alliance, when we talk about the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, the expansion of U.S. access to Philippine bases, and you say, why is all this happening? And the answer is the South China Sea and the inability or unwillingness in Beijing to recognize that its policies in the South China Sea or the West Philippine Sea pushed Manila to this point. I think it's the fundamental problem right now between Beijing and Manila, because from the Philippines' point of view, it's responding to external threats from China. From China's point of view, the Philippines has no agency here. It's not making any of its own decisions. It's a dupe of the Americans, which is, of course, extraordinarily offensive to Philippine policymakers. And it means that the two sides are talking across from each other.
Richard, is this a strategic mistake on behalf of the Philippines? What Andrew was saying is that, okay, they might be the power in the Philippines right now, but the US doesn't control China. China ultimately is its own person, its own man. So you're making a mistake.
Well,
here.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the fact that Greg mentioned a very important word, strategic agency. I love that our friend in China mentioned, or Hong Kong mentioned, that this is really just about US and China, as if none of us matter in the region, it's just about them. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of us have agency in this part of the region. We're all sovereign states. We want to make decisions accordingly. What I also find very interesting is what I call strategic gaslighting. As far as provocation is concerned, the threat is not coming from the Philippines. The Philippines is not threatening China or Taiwan, nor is the United States. The threat of invasion of Taiwan is coming from China. The bullying happening in the West Philippine Sea or South China Sea or whatever you want to call it, it's not from the Philippines. It's not from the United States. So countries like the Philippines gave it a chance under Duterte. We should have got the gold medal for loyalty to China. We did the best we could do under President Duterte to make the situation better for China. And yet we really didn't get much in exchange. So I think right now China has to do some soul searching. You know, they may have the biggest navy in this part of the world, but you know, U.S. is not alone. U.S. has Japan there. U.S. has South Korea there. U.S. has Australia there. It's not just the Philippines. And by the way, the Philippines is just trying to be in a position of preparation. And Philippines wants to help efforts in the region to deter invasion of Taiwan, because Taiwan is closer to the Philippines than most Southeast Asian countries. And the Philippines also wants to expedite the modernization of its armed forces by better alliance with the United States. But let's not make any mistake. Marcos Jr. does not want to just side with the U.S. against China. He just wants to strengthen his country's position. I think we still want to have the best possible relationship we can have with China. But it's a give and take. And if China cannot even accept the Philippines' agency and just sees us as a puppet of America, good luck with that.
Gregory, but post the Second World War, the Philippines did have a pretty great relationship with both China and with the U.S. In fact, it's prided itself as being one of the places that can talk to all of the superpowers, including regional superpowers. So has something gone wrong here, do you think, since Duterte was in power? Do you think something has broken?
Yeah, not just since Duterte. I mean, you're right that from the mid-1970s, when ties were normalized under Marcos Sr. on, the Philippines did pursue very positive relations with China until the 1990s. And in the 1990s, you began to see the acceleration of the South China Sea disputes. China occupied Mischief Reef in the Philippine Exclusive Economic Zone. It began more frequently harassing Filipino fishers at Scarborough Shoal, which the Philippines had administered since the end of World War II. And that really took off under the Aquino government with the seizure of Scarborough and then the island building campaign that caught international headlines. So what you see in public opinion polling and elite opinion polling is that China has gone from being seen as a partner and an economic opportunity in the Philippines to being seen as an external threat, first and foremost.
Andrew, let me bring you in here. What we're talking about, I want to talk to you about hierarchy. China, obviously a very big power, has huge influence in Africa, has huge influence in South Asia, has investments all over the world, practically. How important is the Philippines to China?
Well, I think that Beijing regards the Philippines as a friend rather than as an enemy. There is a great economic relationship between the Philippines and China, as evidenced by the recent state visit by President Marcos to Beijing. And this relationship has been solidified. But what I'm trying to say is that Philippines, by allowing assets inside Philippines to be used by the American military, would subject itself to the risks and the possibility that in case of a war happening over the South China Sea, over the region, those military assets inside the Philippines could jeopardize the security and safety of the Philippine people, because they'd be subject to bombardment by retaliation by China. Now, but let's look at the risks of such a war. Naturally, China doesn't want a war over the South China Sea, and China does want Taiwan to be united with China peacefully. This is endorsed by three serial white paper published by Beijing, the last one immediately following the Nancy Pelosi visit, all stressing the preference for peaceful unification. But the fact remains that most Taiwan people do not want unification, but neither do most of them want independence. They want to maintain the status quo. But while the United States is trying to play the Taiwan card, trying to create more and more diplomatic space for Taiwan to play, as if Taiwan was a separate country, and also allowing more and more senior American leaders to visit Taiwan as if Taiwan was a separate country. So this is trying to hollowing out the one China policy. And then if Taiwan should be allowed to declare formal independence, that would trigger a war. So I think that this war, in as far as the Philippines is concerned, is not a party to it. But unfortunately, by allowing the American military assets inside the Philippines, these assets could well be used by the United States for this war. And by using this military assets, it was subject the Philippines to bombardment by retaliation by Beijing in case such a war happens. This is what I'm trying to say.
Gregory, there is an interesting parallel to be drawn here, and I want to talk about Russia and Ukraine. One of the warnings that the Russians gave the Ukrainians was, don't get too close to NATO. You know, one of the warnings they gave the West was, this is in our sphere of influence. Just do not get involved here. This is Russian sphere of influence. China seems to be doing the same thing with the South China Seas. It seems to be saying to the West, to NATO, to America, that this is our sphere of influence. We're talking about Taiwan. They always mention Taiwan, as Andrew just did. This is a dangerous precedent. It's a dangerous time. You could be walking blindly into a conflict. The US could blunder into a conflict here, surely.
I don't think the US is Pollyannish here. I think the Biden administration understands that the risk of accidental escalation across the region, not just in the Taiwan Strait, but in the South China Sea and the East China Sea, on the Indian border, is getting increasingly high, and a large part of that is because of Beijing's unwillingness to compromise on any of these issues with its neighbors. And for the U.S., there is a balancing act here. It wants to put up guardrails, maintain strategic communication, prevent escalation, but the U.S. is also getting a lot of demand signals from its partners, right? And it has to respond if it wants to continue to be seen as the partner of choice, as a regional security provider. So when the Philippines comes knocking on America's doors and says, we need help because China keeps trying to starve our troops out in the Spratly Islands every 6 weeks, the U.S. has to say yes. When Japan complains, when India complains, when Korea complains, when Vietnam complains, they come to the U.S. as a balancer. And I come back to the point I made earlier. One of the fundamental problems here is you ask China about the Philippines, and China wants to talk about Taiwan. China refuses to recognize that the Philippines has any legitimate reason to fear China, that China has done anything over the last decade to drive the Philippines to the decisions it's made.
Richard, we are talking about Taiwan because it has been brought up. You were talking about the idea that the Philippines is a sovereign nation, that it should be able to develop relations with any country it wants. But the bottom line is that China's got a priority. It's Taiwan. And by allowing the Americans in, you're walking a dangerous path.
Well, I would also want to mention that Taiwan also has an agency, right? So I think Andrew correctly pointed out, we also have to watch out where they're going to elect soon. They're going to have a presidential election very soon. So let's hope that on the part of Taiwan also, they played their cards well so that they don't give anyone any excuse to do anything crazy or out of the box. Now, speaking of the Philippines, the reality is that we're just too geographically close to Taiwan to sit this out. And at the same time, we're a U.S. ally. We cannot be neutral because a lot of war games suggest that, including war game, I think, conducted by Gregory Pauling's institution last year, suggests that southern Taiwan's shores could be one point of entry for a potential Chinese kinetic action. And that's just over 100 nautical miles from some of the Philippine bases in Mavulis, in Fuga, among others. By the way, we didn't open those bases to Americans or not yet. But the reality is that the Philippines is just close to the too close to the Taiwan theater to be a neutral. And we're a U.S. ally, so we're not going to be neutral. So imagine a situation, there's a war between U.S. and China, American troops are getting killed or wounded, and then we say we're neutral. So that's why in recognition of that potential nightmare situation, what we want to do, at least that's what Marcos Jr. wants to do, is to prepare for that. And hopefully by having a collective strong stance together with U.S., but also with Japan, among others, deter China from even invading Taiwan. Because I think that's a lesson we are drawing from Ukraine. The reason why Ukraine was invaded was because it was not backed up enough. Had Ukraine had more defense cooperation or assurances from the NATO, from the U.S., I think Russia would have thought it twice. And I think China is way more rational, less more aggressive and reckless than Russia or Putin's Russia. So I think if the Philippines, Japan, and U.S. play their card well through integrated deterrence strategy, perhaps we can deter or make China think twice about any kinetic action in the near future. After all, even Andrew said China doesn't want war too, but we have to prepare for it. If you want peace, you have to prepare for war.
I mean, Andrew, China isn't looking for a war. I mean, I think we can confidently say that, but it might have been easier just to buy the Philippines off. Why didn't China just commit to the billions of dollars it promised the previous government in investment?
Well, I think that, as I pointed out, Philippines is within this regional comprehensive economic partnership, the world's largest trading bloc, accounting for a third of the world's GDP, a third of the world's population, of which the Philippines, of course, is a very important trading partner. But that cannot be used to override China's territorial interests, particularly over Taiwan. So if push comes to shove, and the American assets in the Philippines are being used in such a war, then the Philippines would necessarily be dragged in, not because China wants it, but because of the presence of these American military assets in the Philippines. Now, as far as the Ukraine situation is concerned, there is a perception in Beijing that the United States wants to provoke China into taking untimely action so that China could be dragged into a Ukrainian-type quagmire so as to arrest China's rise and to thwart China's development trajectory. But Beijing is too clever for that. I don't think that Beijing would be drawn to it because Beijing is fully military prepared in terms of anti-access area denial, missiles and drones and aircraft and Blue Water Navy over the Taiwan Strait in case the eventuality actually happens. But Beijing doesn't want that. Beijing wants, as I said, peaceful unification. So I think that Beijing has got strategic patience. The danger for the Philippines is that even though the Philippines would like to remain neutral, it would likely risk being drawn into it willy-nilly in case an eventuality happens.
Gregory Pauling, the U.S. does have a card to play here, though, right? No one wants to be dragged into a war. But the U.S. wants to make sure that the Philippines is a strategic friend, a strategic asset when it comes to military bases. So there's a way for both China and for the U.S. to coexist within the Philippines itself, and that's simply by doing what they're doing, keeping the status quo. Is that something that the government is taking seriously, the U.S. government?
I think it's absolutely correct. If you look at the speeches made by the Secretaries of Foreign Affairs and Defense from the Philippines last week when they were in Washington for the 2+2 meeting with their U.S. counterparts, they both stressed time and time again that they want positive relations, economic relations with China, and a closer military alliance with the Americans, and they see that as key to the Philippines' independent foreign policy, which is not quite the same as neutrality, but it means the Philippines gets to make its own decisions. It is not beholden to U.S. strategic decision-making. And their American counterparts said time and again, we get it. We agree. We support that. The real question, though, is the current status quo actually stable? And while we think so much about the Taiwan Strait for obvious reasons, the fact is that every few weeks, a Filipino Coast Guard ship's getting violently harassed by a Chinese vessel in the South China Sea. That's where the status quo is likely to break. And so I think China cannot maintain its current hyper-aggressive posture in the South China Sea and expect the Philippines not to continue to drift closer to the Americans.
Richard Hardarian, we are running out of time, but I do want to end with you. This idea of the status quo, which is clearly what Philippines is doing. It's managing a relationship between China and between the United States. But that's going to take a lot of political skill. Does this government have that political skill?
I don't think I want to vouch for Marco Jr. yet, but I think he has done far better than many people expected from him the other year. The expectation of most so-called experts was that Marcos Jr. will be kind of like a Duterte 2.0. He'll finish off what Duterte could not, which is essentially making the Philippines like a vassal state of China and a very unreliable or just a kind of a superficial ally of the U.S. And yet that's not what's happened. I think Marcos Jr., he's someone who was part of his father's efforts of normalizing ties with China back in the day in 1970s. He has a lot of experience with geopolitics on a personal level, and he has many, many good advisors around him. So I'm cautiously optimistic that he will not be foolish enough to provoke China, but also not foolish enough to do what his predecessor did. Therefore, I think what he will do is to constantly hedge, keep the alliance with the United States strong enough so that we're not too weak and we have bargaining position with China, but at the same time, not to make it too strong and too in your face so that it will undermine our diplomatic and economic relations with China. It's going to be absolutely difficult. But our hope is it will work, because if it doesn't work, all of us are going to be troubled. By the way, I'm in Vietnam right now, and our hope is not only Philippines, but Philippines will work with other ASEAN countries with similar concerns with China so that we can have an effective collective front in dealing with it. That's why the role of ASEAN is also very important in how we address these problems in this part of the world.
I want to thank all our guests, Richard Hardarian, Gregory Poling and Andrew Leung, and I want to thank you two for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, rather, let's go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.